Welcome to Inside Analog Photography Radio Program. I'm your host, Scott Shepard, and of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is all about traditional process photography. We talk about instant photography. We talk about black and white. We talk about color film. We talk about dry plate, wet plate, you name it, alternate printing processes, everything going on in analog photography. And of course, the Inside Analog Photography Radio Program is brought to you by Fujifilm over at www.fujifilmusa.com/professional. They have beautiful C41 color neg, black and white, color chrome, and of course, instant. Instant film rocks. These guys have so much great things going on right now with instant film. Of course, they have the pack film in 3.25 by 4.25 and 4 by 5. Color, black and white, high speed black and white. But you know what's even cooler? They have the Instax cameras and film. The Instax Wide is in the country, available everywhere. And of course, right now, brand new, the Instax Mini is now in the U.S. They have cameras. They have film. This Instax Mini is 2.5 by 3.5. It's the size of a business card. This is really fun stuff. You got to check it out. www.fujifilmusa.com/professional, making life more colorful. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab, the place to send all your film to get developed, proofs, you name it. They got a great workflow going. www.richardphotolab.com. DR5. For the most unbelievable proprietary process to turn your black and white film into positives, into chrome. You won't believe until you get your film back as a piece of chrome will blow your mind. The dynamic range, the latitude, it's just unbelievable stuff. Definitely check it out, www.dr5.com. Iger Studios, Lenny Iger, the place to have high-resolution scans done. You know, a lot of people now are shooting analog. They're using a high-resolution scan. They're making digital negatives on an inkjet, or maybe they're going straight to an inkjet output. But they're making digital negatives and they're printing contact prints. They're doing all the stuff you need to get a high resolution scan. They're using an Aztec Premier, 8,000 PPI, adjustable aperture. They can give you scans that are basically grain free. They can adjust it for every kind of film out there. This is crazy stuff going on with Lenny Iger and the guys at Iger Studios. Check them out, igerstudios.com. And of course, Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. The camera strap that will not slide off your shoulder. Our media partners, www.apug.org, the Analog Photography User Group, the place on the web for all things analog process. This is a great place to learn, to share information, to get tips and tricks, the community for analog photography, www.apug.org, and of course, our photographic philanthropy partner, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, www.geh.org, the place to go to find out about the history of traditional analog photography. These people are keeping this alive. They have over 7,000 cameras in their museum of everything that's ever been made, including the Hasselblads that were shot on the moon. You name it. They have the collection. This is a great way to help support. You can be a member of George Eastman House organization. They have a lot of great things going on, but this is something you can do to help give back to photography, to help keep traditional analog photography alive for generations to come. Definitely check them out, www.geh.org. Today on Inside Analog Photo, we're going to have with us Lisa Lefkowitz. Lisa is a professional wedding photojournalist out of San Francisco, California, creates beautiful fine art photography. A lot of great stuff going on with Lisa, of course, shooting tons of yummy analog film and just doing beautiful work. Lisa, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining me here on Inside Analog Photo. And we just want to talk about your beautiful photography, how you got into photography, your use of film, your hybrid workflow, and how things are going with Lisa. So tell me, Lisa, how did you get into photography?
Well, I started really early. I started in high school, and I grew up in New York City in Manhattan. And so I had all of the things that a city has to offer all around me in the arts growing up. So I took my first photography class when I was probably 15, and my parents gave me a Pentax K1000. And I just fell in love and spent all my afternoons in the dark room. Yeah, it kind of just went from there.
So you started with a K1000, I guess, shooting a lot of black and white.
Exactly. Yeah, it was all black and white really until college, I would say. Yeah, so I started in high school and I took some continuing ed classes and stuff at the new school. Then one of the really kind of formative experiences I had was my high school had a program where you could do an internship in the arts. And I got placed at Wenner Media, which has Rolling Stone and Us Magazine. Us Magazine is where I ended up, but it was actually a completely different publication back in the 90s. It was sort of like Entertainment Weekly and Rolling Stone all in one. So it was more of a kind of lifestyle, music and movies and stuff like that. And so I was the assistant to the photo editor as a 17-year-old. that was just where I was really exposed to an editorial lifestyle kind of photography. I was looking at people like Peggy Sirota and Stephanie Rouser and Anton Corbin and Mark Seliger, and that was really a huge influence on me.
So what got you to where you were able to get this gig as an intern to start off and actually working with these guys?
I don't even remember. It was some connection. Somebody's parent knew somebody, and I just kind of showed up. And I said, I love photography, obviously. I'm doing it for free. Can I come here a few days a week? And they were like, sure, why not? So I don't remember exactly how it happened, but somehow I ended up there. And the photo editor, an Australian woman named Rachel, just really took a liking to me and really just mentored me, and it was really amazing. I actually did my first editorial job at 17. I shot one of the contributors. I shot a portrait of her, and that was in the magazine, and that was really exciting. And then Rachel, the editor, moved to Rolling Stone, and so she was the photo editor of Rolling Stone in the late 90s. She actually gave me some great opportunities in college. I did a handful of editorial jobs for Rolling Stone. They flew me all over the country. It was pretty amazing.
Wow, how cool is that?
Yeah, it was. It wasn't something I was really ready for, and I think I didn't capitalize on it because of that. I didn't know, oh, how do you get your book together, and how do you get a rep, and how do you do all that kind of stuff. So I sort of did the jobs, and it sort of stopped after that. And she moved back to Australia, and she was sort of my big fan. So after that, I didn't really follow up with anything else. So it was kind of a one-time thing, but definitely had a big effect on me to do that kind of work, to be in the editorial world and to be looking at those kinds of images along with the fine art stuff that I then kind of moved into in college.
Let's talk about this experience of flying around, doing these gigs for them, and then how this equated to maybe what you started to take in college and actually formalize what you were working on.
One of the jobs that I did, it was a story on a guy who had been put away for maybe 25 years, something like that. He was my age, and he was probably in his late teens, early 20s, and he was put away for medical marijuana dealing. I think that's what it was. So I went to this kind of mid-security prison, the only woman, so young, and I remember walking through the halls just, oh my God, how did I get here? They put me in a little room with him, and they said, go. So I had my little lights, and I was shooting Hasselblad at the time. Just kind of cranked out some black and white photos of him. But that was just amazing at that age to have that kind of experience. One other gig I did was a woman who was attending Kent State University. They were doing a feature on the anniversary of the Kent State shootings. So it was kind of a portrait of a woman who was there today and how the history of Kent State had affected her experience of going there. I was kind of doing these environmental portraits is what I called them. Portraits of people in their everyday spaces. And that's sort of what I moved into doing more of in college. My work became more color-based. I was printing my own color stuff. I was just doing a lot of kind of environmental portraits, not so much photojournalistic. They did have a kind of lifestyle editorial feel to them, and that was something that I was criticized for in the kind of fine art context, that my work looked too lifestyle and too kind of commercial.
And who was complaining about this?
The professors and the whole art scene. And then when I moved out to California and I was trying to kind of make it as a fine artist, and trying to do gallery shows and juried exhibitions and stuff like that, that was still something that came up, that my work looked like I should be a commercial photographer. And so I take that as a compliment. I think I really found my home in wedding photography, and I think all these years I was being led in that direction. And I think both my fine art background and my editorial background kind of came together in wedding photography.
So you're in New York, you're going to school. What brought you out to San Francisco?
I actually came out for the San Francisco Art Institute. I came out here for my junior year of college. I kind of took a semester abroad to go to San Francisco. Just fell in love with California and with San Francisco. And then I was considering doing an MFA, kind of applied and got in. And then at the last minute decided that I had been in school for 18 years and was done with it. And so then I just kind of tried to find my way out in the working world.
So you go to Art Institute. Tell me about your experience at Art Institute. How was that?
That was definitely amazing and life-changing. I don't know what you know about the San Francisco Art Institute, but it's just been home to some amazing artists, and it has a really strong photography program, a really strong film program. They had graduate students there, so you're kind of with some people doing amazing work. Elizabeth Messina, I think, went to the San Francisco Art Institute, so it has a history of some great artists, as well as kind of more fine artists. It was just great. I think it really opened me up to another side of the fine art world. I was seeing a lot of installation work and video work, and I shot a lot of Super 8 and hand-processed my own Super 8 and spliced it. Just did a lot of stuff that I hadn't been open to before.
So when you were going to Art Institute, you still had the notion of, okay, I want to do fine art. How did things change into the revelation of, okay, I'm going to shoot weddings?
Well, it was kind of that classic thing where you do a wedding for a friend and it just snowballs. I had graduated from college. I didn't go on to do my MFA. I was working in San Francisco. I was teaching some photography in an extension program. I was just kind of trying to figure out what I wanted to do. A fellow photographer said, oh, will you shoot my wedding? And I did, and it was great. And I was like, oh, wow, I can make money at this. People seemed to appreciate what I was doing. And then that was almost 10 years ago, and I just slowly built my business over time, and here I am today.
Let's talk about your wedding photography. You're quite busy.
Yes,
you've had some great accolades on your work.
It's been good, yeah. The last few years in particular have just been really great.
Have you found that people look for Lisa to shoot their wedding and the other things you're doing because you shoot on film, or it doesn't even come up?
Sometimes it does. You get those rare people, those graphic designers or those artists themselves who really want film and look for film. But most of the time, I would say people just respond to the work and they don't know enough to care about how the work is made. They're always interested when I say that I shoot primarily film. I don't think it's something that at this point in technology people are necessarily looking for.
Let's talk about that before we get into a couple other things here, but the aesthetics of why you're shooting film. You shoot digital, and you've been shooting film for many, many years, black and white, color. You processed and printed your own color, so you even have a little bit more background than most.
I do. I think, printing color was definitely a great experience, and now when we do a lot of stuff in Photoshop, it's funny. It's so much easier, I think. All those years spent in the darkroom, I do enjoy the computer a little bit more. But yeah, so I am primarily film. I would say about 75% of each wedding that I shoot is film, and then 25% is digital.
Give me your thoughts on the aesthetics of why you're shooting film over digital.
Right.
Because, okay, Photoshop's great. There's no chemicals. Your fingers don't turn black. No stinky smells. You can sit in a nice comfy chair with the AC on. Whatever you want. You can take your laptop out to the beach. You can do whatever you want with digital, but you still shoot film, and there's a reason for it.
There is, and I think it's not only the result, which is definitely a huge factor, but there's just something to me about the process of shooting film. I feel like I'm much more in the moment when I shoot film. I'm kind of planning everything in camera. Everything happens in camera, and I just love that experience. I think from when I was 15, picking up that camera for the first time and just feeling that amazing kind of magic of creating images, I feel that way more when I'm holding a film camera than a digital camera. I don't know why that is exactly, but there's something about the clink of the shutter and just knowing that it's all going to happen in camera. Even with my digital, I do try and think that way and shoot that way, and I don't do a ton of post-production. It's all pretty simple and continuing the aesthetic of film, but somehow I just love the feeling of shooting film. And the look is really important to me. It really has defined my work. I can't imagine that my work would look the way it does if I had switched over to digital the moment it came out. I think the kind of light, airy, shallow depth of field, romantic look to my work is defined by film.
Now, are you shooting all color? Any black and white?
I do shoot some black and white, but primarily color. I'm shooting Contax 645 and shoot a lot of 220 film. I do shoot some 120 black and white, but I'm kind of a color girl, so I'd say I shoot like maybe 4 or 5 rolls of black and white film, mostly color.
So, Lisa, you shoot all this color, you have all this experience with color. Why do you shoot black and white at all then?
Well, I still love the look and feel of black and white film, and I think that it's really unique. I can't always get what I want in digital in black and white. For example, T-Max 3200 has been a really important film in the way a lot of my images look. Especially these kind of couples laughing by candlelight to a toast kind of thing, or first dance. I just love the grainy kind of natural look I get with that T-Max 3200. And then I'll also do some portraits with black and white film just because I just love the tonal range and the warmth that you get from true film.
Let's get into what kind of look you're trying to convey when you're doing your wedding photography. I know you like to shoot the contacts. Do you shoot any 35? Do you shoot everything wide open for shallow depth of field? Tell me about your look a little bit, because you have beautiful photography, and it definitely looks the shallow depth of field. But tell me your process behind what you like to capture and how and so forth.
Sure. Well, I do shoot primarily Contax 645, and that's the camera that I love to use whenever possible. I mean, it's not great for people moving around and that kind of thing, but I do use it during cocktail hour. I use it whenever humanly possible, because the images coming out of that are just spectacular. I do shoot pretty wide open. I mean, I'm not shooting everything at f2, but I definitely shoot around f4 or sometimes 2.8 for details. Occasionally, I'll shoot at f2, but I would say f4 is pretty much where I hang out, and then maybe 5.6 for group portraits and stuff. I do shoot some 35mm film, although not a ton, and I'm shooting with the Canon EOS 3 bodies, and that's, I'd say, mostly when I'm shooting T-Max 3200.
I think if people look at your work that aren't really familiar with shooting medium format, is you can shoot f4 and still get a shallow depth of field. where right, typically if right. you were shooting 35 millimeter, people would look at it and go, well, I need to shoot that at 1.4, 1.2, or something of the sort because of the depth of field difference between medium format and 35.
It's true. It is amazing. That's one of the things I love about it.
Let's talk about your wedding day workflow. Is it just yourself? Do you have an assistant or two? It really looks like most of your stuff's available light. I don't know if you like using flash. Tell me about your style when you go out and do a gig.
Sure. Well, I do have a second person with me, and she's really integral to the whole day. And she functions as kind of a combination assistant and second shooter. I shoot a ton of film. I usually shoot 40 or 50 rolls at a wedding, and I shoot really quickly. And even though I'm shooting 220, there's a lot of film changing. And I shoot with the insert system, so she's got these little clamshell boxes with inserts in them, and she's loading those constantly. And then I'm shooting and handing the film back to her and kind of switching the inserts. So there's a lot of that, but that's really more intensive in getting ready and portrait section of the day. And then kind of the rest of the day, she's second shooting and giving a supplementary perspective to my primary images. But she's great, and she's also helping with my heavy bags. I definitely am known for carrying a lot of gear. I have three bags, and they're all pretty heavy, two big rolling bags and one shoulder bag, and then tripods and reflectors and all that. So I'm definitely not a one-bag gal.
Wow.
I know.
So you're not taking your little lens bag along, and I'm ready to go. You're
no,
bringing hardware
I wish that
out.
Was the case. But I love my gear, and I got a whole bag just full of contacts gear, and the bag of 35, and then a backup bag. So it kind of ends up being a lot.
So let's talk about that. You're a gearhead, and that's cool. So the contact stuff, tell me what you're shooting. I mean, is most of the time the 82-0, the piece of glass on
that's
your body?
So I have two different bodies, and like I'll have black and white in one. Because a lot of the black and white film only comes in 120. I shoot the Ilford Delta 3200 and the Ilford Delta 400. And so those are only available in 120. So just to keep confusion down and the 120-220 issue and the backs, the inserts are flipped for either 120 or 220. So I have one body that's dedicated to black and white and one to color. So I've got the 80. Those are the primary lenses. Then I also have the wide angle, the 55 2.8. That's great. I use that for like ceremony overviews or ballroom or reception setup overviews, that kind of stuff.
But pretty much you're a prime shooting straight up. Give me one piece of glass and you're happy.
Yes. And I have a little Wonder Woman belt that has pouches that hold all my different lenses because, yes, I love prime lenses, whether it's on the contacts or on 35 film or on digital. I think the prime lenses are really a huge key to getting beautiful images because they're just so much better than the zoom. I do use the 24-70 for the Canon, and I use that during dancing or something when I'm just kind of backed into a crowd and I need to be able to be really versatile quickly.
So let's talk about some more gear here to start with. So mainly, do you use any other gear for portrait with the contacts or pretty much everything with the 82-0, or do you have the 142-8?
I don't own the 142-8. I do rent that occasionally, and it's really beautiful. It's something that's sort of on my wish list, but I haven't gotten to because I'm just so happy with the 80, but it's something I might purchase in the future.
Okay, so pretty much the contacts, unless you need a wide shot, it's the 80. You're rocking.
Exactly, yeah, unless it's some 30-person wedding party and I can't move back because there's a tree or a wall or something, then that's when I'll use the 55, but otherwise it's the 80.
So tell me about the Canon EOS 3. What kind of glass are you shooting with that?
Well, I've got all the prime lenses, and then those kind of match up with the Canon 5D when I'm shooting digitally. So I've got the 50 1.4 and the 28 1.8, the 85 1.8, and then the 50 2.5 macro, and then the 24-70 that I mentioned, and then I also have the 70-200, and I use that a lot on the digital to kind of mimic the feel of medium format.
Very cool. So let's talk about, before I get into workflow and some of the other stuff that you're up to, the digital.
Yes, the digital, evil digital.
Why do you integrate digital into what you're doing? Is it that, okay, I'm at a reception and these are basically throwaways, so I'm not going to waste film on it?
I was so resistant to digital for many years, and I was one of the last people to start using it in my group of photographer friends in San Francisco. And everyone was like, oh, you're crazy, you need to start using digital. I started doing a few commercial jobs where it was, why did I not know how to shoot digital? I really should have learned. So I decided, I think it was about 3 years ago, that I needed to know how to shoot digital. Once I started to learn, I realized that there were some advantages to shooting digital, and there were some lighting conditions and situations in a wedding that it would be to my advantage to shoot digital. One example is in a church in crazy low lighting. I'd have so many situations where I had my camera on a tripod with T-Max 3200, and I was just metering in the shadows and praying that my exposures were right on. Most of the time they were, but there are definitely a few times where it was a little thin, and with digital, it responds a little bit better to light. in those dark church situations, I can get beautiful images and look at the back of the camera and know it's there, feel confident about it, and move on. And that peace of mind to me is just huge. And we're still getting some beautiful overviews in film, and it all comes together, and it's just something that works for me. Yes, I am shooting flash stuff at the reception in digital, and I change a lot of that to black and white. And I don't know, it just kind of works for me, especially with flash, to be able to see what I'm doing. I feel like I can be more creative with flash. I can bounce it off the ceiling or the walls or do a lot of things that I might not have experimented with when shooting film because I couldn't see the immediate result. But I would, again, say that my primary images, images that are in magazines, images that are on my website or my blog, images that usually end up in the client's albums are film, and that I sort of see the digital images as supplementary. And because of technical reasons, it's to my advantage to shoot digital.
So when you're shooting film, it's pretty much all available light, or using flash also with the film gear?
No, the film is all available light, definitely.
Cool. So let's talk about when you've captured digital, are you using supplemental plugins in Photoshop to give it a film look so it matches your analog capture?
No, I have not. I recently, I think it was maybe about 2 years ago, changed over to using Adobe Lightroom, which has just revolutionized my workflow and my life. And it's one of the best things that's ever happened to me on the computer. Lightroom is just such a great workflow. I have my film scanned at a high resolution by my lab. I dump it in with my raw files. We edit, color correct the digital that needs to be adjusted. But I don't use actions. We do have some presets that I have set up that kind of match the look of my film. I've never had a client say, oh, these don't match, or which one's film, which one's digital. I really make a huge effort to present them as a seamless, cohesive body of work to each client, and I think it's working.
No, sure, the stuff's great. You really can't tell.
Oh, good.
I think mostly the consumer anymore has no idea of which is what, unless it's somebody that really knows analog photography and film and says, I really want this look.
It's true, and I'm thinking about not only my client, but when I'm putting something on a blog or in a magazine, I'm thinking about my fellow industry peers. I want it to be seamless for them and for what I'm showing as well, so there's that kind of double motivation.
Tell me about your film. I mean, I know you're shooting with the Ilford black and white, but what are you using for color stock?
Exactly. So my main color stock is Fuji. I love Fuji. I'm a Fuji NPZ 800 and Fuji NPH 400 girl. I actually shoot, I think, significantly more 800 than most people do. Or at least they always sound shocked when I mention that that's my primary film. Because I shoot mostly in shade or kind of soft light, and I love the versatility that I get. Kind of get an extra stop out of that 800, and it enlarges beautifully. That's kind of my primary film.
When you're shooting, let's say, the 800, are you shooting a stop, two stops, overexposed? What do you like to do for your exposures with the color neg?
I'm rating the Fuji at half, so I shoot the 800 at 400 and the 400 at 200.
It's great to see you using this 800 stock. Shooting the Fujifilm, I think, definitely has that look when you shoot it at half, basically a good stop or even more. Do you sometimes even push it more than a stop overexposed?
I do. I'm actually a hand meterer. I use my light meter all the time. I don't use the internal meter in the contacts, which I know most people do, but somehow I've always been used to hand metering. And a lot of times, if the meter's saying, whatever, 5.6½, I'll just shoot at 5.6. So I'm like, an extra half a stop. It couldn't hurt. So I definitely kind of err on the side of caution and overexpose by maybe another half or a full stop sometimes just to be safe.
So you actually wear your meter around your neck?
I wear it on my little Wonder Woman belt in a little Velcro pouch. So I'm kind of constantly digging in there.
What meter are you using?
It's a Minolta meter. It's like the Minolta 4 flash meter or something, but it's one of the digital meters, and it's just easy to read.
So are you using incident or reflective, or are you just using the spot meter on it to maybe just hit on someone's face and go from there?
I'm using the light that's falling on the subject, not reflective.
Oh, great. Very cool.
Yeah, so I'm just always running around, and people are like, what is that? Is that my aura meter? What is that? So people get used to it, and I don't know. It's just the way I've always shot, and I'm used to shooting that way. I don't know. I should probably try and use the meter in the contacts, but I've just never gotten around to it.
Well, you're going to get better metering from the Minolta.
Yeah, exactly.
Even though the meter's okay in the contacts.
That's what I've heard.
I've never used it myself either. I have one. I use a Seikonic, so.
There you go.
Now, when you're metering a scene, do you basically say, okay, well, the light's pretty much cool for now, so for the next half hour, I'm good to go, and you just click it once and roll?
No, I'm too much of a control freak for that.
Really?
If you see me at the wedding, I've constantly got my finger on the trigger. So, I meter pretty frequently, I would say, at least every half a roll or something.
Very cool. You have the well, no, that's good. I mean, you have the fundamentals down, and you're making sure the stuff's on the money.
Yeah, I just like to check. I have a whole kind of little anal system of checking everything I'm doing as I shoot, and that's just one of my little rituals.
Besides the 800, you shoot 400, I'm assuming, 400H?
Yes.
Anything else you played with that's cool?
No, I've sort of lowered it down to those standards. I've tried some of the press film and all that, but I just never had the best results. I probably just wasn't shooting it right. But for the medium format, those two films are just all I need, and I love them to death.
Ever tried any Kodak, Portra, anything like that?
I have, yeah. I did shot a lot of the 400 VC and all that, but just the last few years, I felt like the color palette of Fuji is more of the look that I'm going for.
Yeah, the stuff is beautiful, and Fuji rocks, so what can you say?
There you go.
I mean, it's good to get your stuff down to two kinds of film. That's it. Think if you had a bag full of eight different emulsions.
Yeah, it can be really complicated. My lab prints everything on Fuji paper, so it's just a nice kind of package of Fujiness.
So let's talk about this beautiful Fujiness here. Who's your lab?
My fabulous lab is Lightwaves Imaging in San Francisco. They're a small independent lab. They cater primarily to editorial and commercial photographers as well as fine art photographers. They have some amazing, super well-known people who they print for, like Larry Sultan and Todd Heido. These are huge, nationally known artists. And so they didn't have a lot of wedding photographers on their roster. And I started working with them, and I just loved everything they were doing. They have super high standards because they are working with these great photographers. So they've really just catered to me. You walk into the lab, there's one person there. He knows everything about me, and he knows my preferences. It just works really well. And because of me being there and spreading the word, they've had a bunch of other wedding photographers come on board. So they could have 20 or 25 wedding photographers whose work they do now.
Because I know a lot of people send their stuff to Richard Photo Lab.
I know. Richard Photo Lab is the place to be. Now, I definitely have heard a lot about it. But I used to ship my film, and honestly, it's just so great. I drive downtown 15 minutes. I'm there. I drop off the film. We have a great relationship, and they've done a lot for me. So I'm just happy to kind of have something local where I can just go down there and talk to them.
So let's talk about that. So you take them your film. They do nice quality processing. They're using Fuji Chemical. Talk about the hybrid into the workflow, because no matter who it is anymore, unless it's really rare, people are shooting analog. The stuff gets scanned by the lab, and now it's in a digital environment. Gets printed back out on an analog paper, but it's done digitally. So there's this hybrid gig going on. Tell me about your scans you get back from Lightwaves.
Exactly. So I get large TIFF scans back from them. They're probably around 20 megs, and I dump those into Lightroom along with the raw files. So once I've done everything in Lightroom, then I generate high-resolution JPEGs. So then we have a JPEG workflow in terms of our printing, and then I generate different size JPEGs if I want to put them onto the web gallery for people to order. Then I have a PicPic site, so I'll generate low-res JPEGs and upload those to my server. Then we have our high-res JPEGs to print from. But I think they're using a Noritsu. Is that an analog printing, or that's a digital printing process?
Well, the Noritsu scanner, to scan
right,
and they have a Noritsu printer. Well, Noritsu had an actual analog printer, but they're probably taking the digital files because you take your stuff, they send it to you, and you send it back to get printed, or do they print the proofs at the time they scan it?
No, I'm sending them the digital files back, and they're printing from those.
So they're printing on a Noritsu digital, so it's using an LED laser.
Exactly. Okay, that's what it is.
Digitally printed.
Right, exactly. Yes, that all sounds right.
But it's on yummy Fuji papers.
We've spent a lot of time tweaking. I have very specific specs on my scans. When I did start printing things digitally, I was really kind of hyper aware of the sharpness issues. I don't like things to look really sharp, contrary to what a lot of people like. I like things a little bit softer. So I don't have my scans sharpened in the Noritsu when they're scanning them. I have them kind of negative sharpness, so that then I can control the sharpness level for digital printing and not have it be too kind of sharp.
Right. So have you found using Lightwaves, the pricing to be pretty competitive with other labs? I mean, have you found the analog capture and workflow to be prohibitive cost-wise?
No, and I would really encourage all photographers who have a good relationship with their lab to negotiate some set rates for their work. I give them a huge amount of business every year, and because of that, they appreciate that, and they've given me very competitive rates. But I think a lot of people don't necessarily do that, and so the analog workflow can seem really expensive. But I think a combination of working out a great rate with your lab, as well as just really looking at the post-production costs of digital are high. And in my mind, it all works out pretty evenly to shoot a roll of film, process and scan it, versus shoot raw, have to color correct it, export it, all that business. I think it really evens out.
So tell me about your workflow. So you get this 18 to 20 meg scan back from Lightwave. What do you do from there before it goes back for a proof or it goes back out to be printed for the album?
We don't do too much. I mean, my scans from them are clean. They rarely have any dust spots on them. They look amazing. They know exactly what I want in terms of density and contrast and all that kind of stuff. So I'm getting my scans back pretty much ready to go, and maybe I'll do a little bit of cropping or burning and dodging. In Lightroom, you can actually do burning and dodging on the working files, which is pretty amazing. Yeah, so I don't do too much.
So that's great. So basically, your process time probably per image is what? Not very long.
Yeah, I mean, gosh, I don't even know, maybe 15 seconds, 30 seconds. When we're getting it ready for an album versus a proofing stage, sometimes there's a little bit more work done. But again, not too much. I mean, compared to the digital images, it's nothing. I mean, when we are working with the digital images in Lightroom in conjunction with the film images, we do spend more time on those, trying to get those to look right. And I'm always more picky about those because I never like the way they look as much as the film.
Deliverables. When someone comes to a wedding with Lisa, is it, okay, well, you're going to get this and this? Or is it like, I'm going to show up and shoot, and then you buy everything separately? How do you work your gig?
Well, over the years, I've really honed my packages. I have very simple packages and a coverage-only package, which is just myself and my assistant there for the day. And then I have a package with an album, and then I have a package with an album and two parent albums. So it's really simple, but the focus of my studio is very high-end, customized, fine art books. And these books are really what I sell to the client as the finished product of our work together. It's kind of their portfolio, 60 images from all of their hundreds and hundreds of photos. So that's really the focus, and I definitely present it that way to the clients. So most of my clients are doing one of these very customized books.
And who are you using for your books?
I use several different sources. I use Cypress Albums, who is great. I use their Iris books. And then I use Michael Chin, who's a really wonderful local bookbinder in San Francisco, although he works with photographers all over the country. He does these really beautiful, high-end kind of museum books. They're Japanese silk covered, but they're a matted album in a very modern way. They're really great. And then I work with a private bookbinder in San Francisco who does some really spectacular kind of high-end customized books for me, where we'll stamp a client's logo onto the front of the book and do custom clamshell boxes. And so I kind of, that's sort of my over-the-top album. So I work with three different bookbinders.
That's great, because when you mention high-end or higher-end, most people typically find that Cypress is fairly high-end. And if you have higher-grade books in them, that must be pretty nice stuff.
Yeah, no, I love Cypress, and my clients go crazy for their Iris books.
Let's talk about things that you would like to do photographically that you haven't had a chance to do yet. I mean, you're shooting a lot of great, beautiful photography for wedding stuff. You've been doing some work with some kids. You're shooting some portraiture there. But what does Lisa want to do that you haven't got to do yet?
Well, that's a good question. I don't know. I would definitely like to do some really high-profile weddings, maybe some celebrity weddings, some more destination weddings. I haven't done too much destination stuff. I've just kind of not focused on it, but I'd love to kind of do some more traveling and shoot in some different places. My husband's from England, so I have this fantasy that we'll do some weddings over there with the connections I have. But, yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure exactly what else.
Nothing you haven't had a chance. Is there anything you want to do? Maybe 4x5 portraits?
Yeah, I shot a lot of that 4x5 Polaroids, where you get the negative from the 4x5 Polaroid. I'd love to do some more of that. I think that would be really great. I really enjoyed shooting 4x5, and I think there's that same feeling when shooting medium format, but 4x5 slows it down so much. I actually tried to shoot 4x5 at a few weddings early on, and it's just so slow that it just wasn't really feasible.
Do you find anymore, maybe even specifically being from San Francisco, that some clients request actually true formal portraits?
Do you mean by formal portraits like portraits of their families or pre-wedding kind of bridal stuff?
Pre-wedding bridal. And this is something that I had talked with Todd actually last week on. But I noticed that at Imaging USA, and they have their big Grand Poobah Medal Award-winning deal they have with all their prints, okay? And I noticed that in the wedding category, you had all the American photographers doing this hip, cool stuff in the street and all these engagement photos and cool stuff. But if you looked at all of the true, what you would call a pre-bridal portrait, it was all Asian stuff. Very exquisite, Victorian, I mean, just unbelievable work. Beautiful images. But I noticed that with you being in San Francisco, and there's a very large Asian community in San Francisco, have you had people actually look for more of a traditional portrait in that sense? Or maybe not?
No, not so much. I mean, a large percentage of my clientele is Asian. But I would say just in general, my clientele is really looking for a very natural lifestyle look to their images. So that's not something that I have ever been asked to do. Bridals aren't that big in the Bay Area.
So you haven't had this big kind of response, even though there's a big gathering of that typical deal. That's interesting.
Yeah, there are some photographers who specialize in that. So I think those clients gravitate towards those people.
Very interesting. So tell me, do you ever get to go shoot chrome? Shoot any chrome at a wedding once in a while? Shoot a little bit of slide film?
No, I haven't. I haven't shot chrome in, oh my gosh, I don't know, more than 10 years probably.
Wow. So Lisa, you have this great photography, beautiful stuff going on, the weddings, the kid photography. You've had really, really great success with having your pictures published. You said that one of the things that you want to do moving forward is to maybe do a little bit more editorial work. You'd love to have a nice gig with Martha Stewart on the media. Let's talk about your business end of it and your business sense and the way you've been working with editors. And I think maybe part of this has to do with your background when you were a teenager working in New York City and actually dealing with some photo editors. And maybe some of the stuff is sort of synced in a bit. So tell me your thoughts on what you're doing to get your work out there, because there's a lot of people shooting weddings.
There are, and it's only increasing, it seems. I think I realized early on what a central part wedding magazines played in the wedding industry and in brides' perceptions of photographers, and in a way as a PR vehicle. Early on, I started submitting weddings to wedding magazines and just kind of became visible in that way. It's really contributed to kind of being nationally seen. Yeah, I think maybe my experience early on did kind of give me the confidence that, hey, photo editors are just regular people. They're just looking for great images, so why not send them some that I think are good? A few years ago, I went to New York and I went around with a portfolio and kind of reconnected in person with a lot of the editors I'd spoken to over the phone or on email over the years. And that was really great just to kind of make in-person connections. Yeah, I've just been really lucky and fortunate to have a lot of my weddings published. And I think it kind of generates from itself. Brides see those images, planners see those images, and you kind of end up with weddings that are intended for wedding magazines. A lot of brides want to be in wedding magazines. They'll work with their event designer to create images that are publishable. They'll speak to me about that in advance. So it all comes together, I think, from the wedding magazine.
Let's talk about the difference in shooting for the bride, shooting for yourself, and what you think you want, and shooting for what you think a photo editor wants. Because especially, I think, in this day now with the economic situation that the country's in, a lot of magazines are featured on the DIY. The do-it-yourself stuff. I mean, everybody wants to see all this great detail shots. Look at Susie made her own invitations. What's your thoughts on the three differences between what a bride wants? And maybe we can discuss this whole fairy tale deal with what brides think the whole wedding thing is and how they're thinking that they want to be portrayed, and versus what you're shooting for, what you want to see with your eye, versus who you've been dealing with, like the people at Elegant Bride or Brides Magazine, on what you think they want.
Well, the good news is that brides are coming to their wedding armed with wedding magazines, having seen a million wedding magazines, and blogs are, of course, the new big thing, and having looked at a million blogs. I think that they're almost expecting their wedding to look like it's from a wedding magazine. So they're kind of prepped in that sense that they're open to detail shots, they're open to kind of more creative shots. But there is always that constraint of we need to do the portraits, we need to nail the kind of winner shots. I might be a little bit less risky or creative in a few moments because I just need to nail the winner shot. But photo editors for magazines are looking for detail shots. They want a few shots of the bride and groom, but primarily they want close-ups of seating cards and reception table setups, unusual bouquets and shoes and stuff like that. So I am shooting for them as well as for the bride, but in a way it all comes together because I think brides love those shots. A lot of times people hire me because of my detail work. They love my detail shots and they say, oh, I want detail shots, lots of detail shots. So it kind of all works out. And then, of course, there's also all the vendors. It's really important to make sure all the vendors have their work covered, all the florists and event designers to have photos of their work and make sure to get plenty of that stuff for them as well. And that's been important to my business as well, to make sure to get CDs out to every single vendor after a wedding with images of their work.
When you shoot a gig, do you send every gig to a certain list you have? Do you have a publicist that deals with your PR? Do you send out every gig, or how do you select what you're going to send?
I don't have a publicist, and people often ask me that. It's just been something that I enjoy doing, to do the submissions and to kind of work on that side of my business. So I do it all myself. I don't necessarily send every single wedding I shoot to a magazine. Some weddings are more appropriate in terms of the intensive and creative and unique details that they have. I sort of know that some weddings that don't have those details are just kind of going to distract from the great ones that I send in and that the photo editors would be more receptive to. So what I typically do is I send a CD with maybe 100 images, and I also print out contact sheets of those images. I have an Epson Photo R2400, so I'll print those out, or I'll print them at Kinko's or something. I'll submit the contact sheets with the DVDs, and I've had a great success rate from doing that and feedback from editors that that's how they prefer submissions to be made.
It's really amazing that you bring that up, because so many people email some photos in or send a DVD in, and A, they get it in the mail, and basically they open it up and it gets slung into the can.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. And I think sending a hard copy they can look at and be drawn in by is really important.
Typically, people won't throw away photographs.
Exactly.
So if you send some nice shots in on an 8x10 or even a proof sheet, something that looks cool, it's going to lay on their desk.
Exactly. And a personal handwritten note and a little piece of chocolate or something never hurt either.
It doesn't hurt to bribe people off.
There you go.
Because that's how people did business a long time ago. And if you want to conduct business in the old school way, and I think a lot of people in the publishing industry do business the old-fashioned way, and you had to take care of things. Like you said, it goes a long way, and it's not that big a deal.
Exactly, yeah. And something else that's been really interesting to deal with in the last few years in terms of magazines has been the rise of blogs. A lot of photo editors are really hesitant to publish something that's been on a blog before. So there's kind of an exclusivity issue now with, is something published in a magazine or in a blog? Where was it first? Can it come out on a blog after it's been in a magazine? Yes, but maybe after 3 months. So it's definitely been a kind of tricky thing not to spread yourself too thin between the blogs and the magazines. And with the blogs, there is that immediacy factor and that ability for viewers to click on that link to go straight to your website, whereas with a magazine, they have to write down your website and type it into the computer. So that's really been something I'm trying to balance, is how do I still maintain a presence on a blog like Style Me Pretty, but still have a wedding in Brides Magazine, for example.
Well, I mean, that's the question, okay? So you'd like to have stuff on Style Me Pretty. Great website, lots of pretty stuff, very cool. But if you're going to get this great wedding, why are you going to send it to them when you want to send it to Omni Media so it'll go in Martha's book?
Exactly. And I think with blogs, there is this kind of oversaturation of Style Me Pretty has 3 weddings a day or something like that that they're showing, whereas Martha Stewart's showing 5 weddings in one issue every 3 or 4 months. So there is a kind of specialness to something being published in hard copy that isn't there with a blog.
Right. So you find that, I guess, it's difficult to be able to pick what gig you're going to do and where is it going to go?
Exactly. I'm not shooting 60 weddings a year. So I shoot about 20 weddings a year. So I have to be really kind of careful about where I disperse those images to.
How many times per year do you get published? 3-4 times a year? I mean, what's your ratio right now?
I guess if I had to average it out, I'd maybe say, I don't know, 4 to 6 times a year, something like that. I've expanded into international territory. I had a few images in an English wedding magazine and an Australian wedding magazine. So that's been fun. And that kind of allowed me to double up because it's an international magazine, so I could have something both in the U.S. territory and in another country. So that worked out well. But yeah, somewhere in the 4 to 6 range, I try and keep it as high as possible.
Well, sure, because it looks better, I think, in the long run. And the question I was going to ask you next is, okay, there's so many people doing photography. You're doing some really beautiful analog capture, and I don't know that you even state this stuff when you submit your things to photo editors. The, hey, this is shot on film, this is unique, this is different. I don't know if you have a normal pitch letter that you send off, but yes, we have the context of, well, you're going to get more eyes if it's more blogged, more and more people might see it, so you're going to have a higher ratio of booking weddings, but it's more prestigious for the people that do come to your website to see that you've been in 10 different magazines and not just smeared all over Joey's blog somewhere and up on Craigslist.
Exactly, and no, I don't necessarily tell the photo editors that I shoot film, but most of them know. I mean, I think when we were talking about people who have that eye, obviously photo editors are extremely experienced and most of them are aware that I shoot film, whether that's a conversation we had when I met with them in New York or just something that came up saying, oh, I know you shoot film. But I think a lot of times it's something they mention why they respond to my work.
So you've split this up and you send all the good stuff off to the magazines. Let's talk about your presence to the public. When people come look at your website, what's your thoughts on the complexity of your website versus what you get off your blog? Do you find that you still need your really flashy, cool website? Is the blog getting more traffic? How are people connecting with Lisa?
Well, I do feel really strongly that both a website and a blog are really important. And actually, just about a month ago, I launched my new rebrand of my business, which was a huge project and really exciting. And I feel really great about where things are now. But this was a chance for me to really optimize what I wanted to present on the website and what technical qualities the website had, as well as the blog. And I moved to a custom blog, which was a great thing. But from my perspective, my design on the website and the blog reflects the look and feel of my photography. Very simple, very clean. Information is easy to find. The blog is not too flashy. There's one flash little header that comes up where it says journal. But aside from that, it's pretty clean and simple, and I think it should be all about the images.
Right, because if you look at a photographer that's maybe doing some good work that doesn't have this kind of presence, the question is, you've spent a fair amount of money on branding, your letterhead, your business cards, your collateral material. It all works together. It's all exquisite. The websites, I mean, it costs a lot of money.
It does, and I think when you're starting out, you don't necessarily have to do that. I do think, however, whether it's a branding agency or a graphic designer, hiring one of the two when you're starting out is one of the best investments you can make. And you can get a graphic designer to just kind of make you a logo and a business card and work with a template website and get things up and running. But I do think having some kind of consistent brand is really important, whether that's something that you invest thousands with a branding agency or someone who you kind of just do a smaller project with a graphic designer, perhaps.
So let's talk about your logo. It's textual based. It's made from a font. Very clean. It looks beautiful. But what's your thoughts there? I mean, a lot of people are like, okay, well, if I'm going to do a branding, I got to have a graphic person. Maybe you don't.
Yeah, well, I worked with Melanie Halem of Collective Lines on my rebranding, and it was a really great experience. But we started really from ground zero and started with a mood board and words that I wanted to describe my business kind of to resonate visually in the branding materials. I did have a scripted L in my old branding that we kind of carried through into the new brand. But again, I just wanted it to be simple and clean and kind of elegant and have a sort of artisan old world feel, as well as really speak to a high-end luxury business.
Probably because you would consider yourself a high-end luxury business then.
I would hope, yes. I like to consider myself that way, at least.
It depends on your pricing.
Exactly, yes. I am in the high-end for San Francisco. It's just the kind of wedding and clientele that I've really enjoyed working with, especially as I am doing about 20 weddings a year. I'm not shooting 50 or 60, so I needed to make sure that my pricing was going to allow me to do that. That's just kind of my personality. I enjoy shooting fewer weddings, working with clients one-on-one, doing one wedding per weekend, and just really being able to connect with my clients on a personal level. I found that 20 weddings a year was the number that allowed me to do that really well.
So the 20 wedding limit has been put in there by yourself. So if people call up and say, nope, I can't help you, sorry. It's not because you don't have the business. It's because you want to keep it at 20.
Yeah, there were some years kind of in the middle of the last 10 where I would shoot 30 or 40. I was so burnt by the end of the year. So I just sort of thought, well, if I can get my pricing to where it is now, make it so that it works for me financially to shoot 20 weddings a year, then why not? And it's a place where I feel really creative at each wedding and not burnt and kind of overextended.
So what's next for Lisa? You're doing all this great wedding work. You're shooting kids, babies, families, pets. I mean, you got some cool stuff going, beautiful photography on your website. But what's the next gig for you?
Well, I think publishing real weddings and magazines has been really central to my business and where I am now. And I think just continuing with that, I'd love to maybe do an editorial shoot for Martha Stewart or something like that. I did do an editorial shoot for Brides Magazine that's coming out in September, and that was a great experience. So probably try and do a few more things like that.
Do you really like doing the wedding and the kids stuff more so? What's your split preference-wise between shooting kids and shooting weddings?
I prefer weddings. I think kids are great. It's a great balance to the weddings just to be silly and lie down on the floor and shoot kids squirming around playing. And it's just a great balance. But I think weddings will always be kind of my true love. It's just really the way that I get to express my creativity through portraits, through still life, through candid documentary type imagery. So I think weddings will always be it for me.
Yeah, this is great work and just beautiful photography. And I do really appreciate you joining us today, talking about your workflow, the gear you're using, and just spending some time to talk about this beautiful photography you're doing.
Sure. Well, thanks so much for having me.
Thanks for joining us, and we definitely look forward to chatting again. Thank you so much, Lisa.
Thanks, Scott.
Well, there you go. Lisa Lefkowitz. Beautiful, beautiful photography coming out of San Francisco, California, shooting stuff worldwide. Just a beautiful use of the analog process, shooting film, and just making great photography. Very cool stuff. Definitely check out her website. The Inside Analog Photography radio program has been brought to you by Fujifilm, making life more colorful over at www.fujifilmusa.com. Our friends at Richard Photo Lab at richardphotolab.com. DR5 over at www.dr5.com. Iger Studios over at igerstudios.com. Upstrap at upstrap-pro.com. And of course, our media partners, APUG, the Analog Photography User Group, over at www.apug.org. Our photography philanthropy partners, George Eastman House International Museum of Photography and Film, over at www.geh.org. I've been your host, Scott Shipper, here on Inside Analog Photography Radio. We'll be back next week with more great analog photography.